He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday morning. It is 6/16/26. A lot of sixes today if you're playing the lottery or headed to the track. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. It's the Best Stocks Now show for this Tuesday. And I think we saw all new time highs across the board on the market yesterday after a deal of sorts was reached with Iran. And that, of course, has sent oil down considerably today. Can you believe that oil is clear down to $76.75 per barrel? It was $42 higher not too long ago, up around $108 per barrel. And today, of course, way down. And of course, the oil stocks are down. We're starting to get a surge in the market here right now. I think SpaceX has really heated things up here in the NASDAQ. Once again, as if it needed heated up. The Dow today is at 52,047, and I'm 99.9% sure that's an all-time high. When I got in the business 26 years ago, the Dow was at 3,000. Today it's at, I should have just bought the Dow and not done anything else. It's at 52,047 today. The S&P 500, new all-time high today, 7,560. The NASDAQ, I want to say, that's an all-time high, 26,728, and now you've got SpaceX fever taking place. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Keit, our chartered financial analyst. Sounds like you got your sound issues fixed, Barry. You sounded like you were in a submarine
yeah,
in the Bering Sea yesterday.
Yeah, you know, fighting Xfinity a little bit, and got to get my backup hotspot up and running again. But we'll see how we go
it
today.
It sounds good so far today. I sound better, but you sound okay. So that's cool. We had yesterday, I think that we probably kind of hit a pivot point in the market yesterday. With the culmination of the whole SpaceX thing and this deal in Iran, it may be time to do a little bit of rebalancing, Barry. That's what I'll be looking to do today. I may not do anything. We'll just see. I take it one stock at a time, one day at a time. But the Dow was up 92 basis points yesterday. The NASDAQ was up 3.1%. Did you see the memory stocks yesterday?
No, through the roof. Right?
It's unbelievable. And of course, those are our biggest holdings. We hit an all-time high yesterday as a firm. Our assets under management are up 41% since the beginning of the year, Barry. 41% since the beginning of the year, which is a tribute to everybody, the whole team, right? For not only having some good portfolios that are driving
been in the right spots.
You know. And getting a lot of new clients, too, along the way. So it's a double-barrel shotgun approach at the market, and it's working for us here so far this year. And the good news is we still have over half of a year left to go. So that's okay. Who knows where we'll finish the year at. Well, the Iran deal, I don't know. I mean, it almost seems like an extended ceasefire to me. But I think the telling sign that it may be over for quite a while is oil. You look at oil as the indicator there, and oil hitting $76.75 per barrel. There goes the inflation theory out the window. There goes the stagflation theory out the window. And there goes the rate hike. Is it today that the
Fed?
So
Kevin Warsh is for meetings today and tomorrow, and then of course he'll come out. The Fed will come out with the statement. I want to say it's usually 2-3 o'clock tomorrow, and then 30 minutes later you'll have his first press conference. So it'll be interesting to see what he says, how he positions kind of his you know, this regime change, if you will, and see see what's on his mind, I guess.
Well, I'm still going to go out on a limb, and he's going to be a yes man, and he's going to cut interest rates by 25 basis points tomorrow. That's my guess. Would I put money on it in the probabilities market? No, I'd probably get fired from my job if I did that, you know, so no. But I'm just saying my opinion is that he's going to cut interest rates tomorrow because that's been such a bugaboo with President Trump. And now Trump's got his guy in there. Jerome Powell will be sitting in the room sneering and cracking jokes and trying to interrupt the meeting, whatever he can do, sour grapes from old Jerome. But we'll see what they decide tomorrow. You know, everybody has an indicator of some sort. And Barry, you being a chartered financial analyst, have you ever heard of this one? The NASDAQ measured against money supply tops its dot-com peak. So I was around during the dot-com bubble, the year 2000, when the NASDAQ went down 79%. And, you know, when you compare money supply, is that something you look at every day as money supply?
I mean, the point being is, I guess, do you think that money supply was the reason that we had the dot-com bubble, right?
No.
Would be the correlation, right?
Yes.
And so I don't think those, whether they're correlated or not, I don't think that was the causation of that period. So you've got to be careful with some of these. It's no different than the Shiller PE that looks, you know, it's a very long 10-year, they look like a 10-year PE ratio. Well, of course it's elevated over the last 10 years because interest rates had been at an all-time low
right.
for a decade, which makes, you know, makes a higher PE more palatable. So
yeah.
You've got to look at these things within the context of what they're in. To me, the dot-com bubble in today's environment really don't go together because, number one, they had revenue. We didn't even have, you know, forget earnings.
SpaceX has very little in the way of revenue.
Yeah, but they didn't even have revenue back, you know, with these dot-com names. So they would just tell you how many people signed up. Hey, we signed up, you know, we got 100 million email addresses.
AOL was right. pricing their company on how many subscribers they had and how many
right.
new subscribers they got. The subscribers weren't paying anything. You could open an AOL account for free, so it made no sense whatsoever. I do not compare today with the dot-com bubble because we have earnings of $383 expected for next year per share for the S&P 500. I don't know what it was during the – I'm going to guess $10 or $20 or $30, something like that. There was very little in the way of earnings when these dot-com companies were going public. And that's really was – it had nothing to do with money supply. I mean, the only money supply I look at every day is what's in my wallet. Don't leave home without it, especially
right?
a debit card. You know, when you're traveling, that can be big trouble. I've had that happen. But anyways, this guy makes the argument. There's always somebody out there that's got some crazy argument. He says that the QQQ relative to M2 money supply, and I'll have you chime in on what's M2 versus M1 and
right.
M3.
You got to go back to the, I got to break out my economics.
You got to break out your textbook
one.
To figure
yeah,
that out.
For sure.
But it's climbed to a ratio above its 2000 dot-com bubble, according to a bar chart. So, I've used bar charts in the past, and, you know, I see people all the time picking one thing and saying, oh, the market's going to crash because of this. Housing starts. Building permits fall more than expected in May, and this continues to be a big problem because a 30-year mortgage is up around 7% right now. Who is going to sell their home with a 3% loan and go out and buy a new home with a 7% mortgage? That would be totally idiotic. So that brings a total chill to the refinance market, the mortgage guys, the real estate agents, the remodelers, everything. It's hurting everything, and that's why I think that Warsh, I think he should cut 0.25% tomorrow.
Yeah, they need to start buying. What they need to do is start buying, you know, kind of those old Operation Twist. Remember, they would buy, you know, buy some of those longer dated Treasury, trying to pull that rate down, which would help mortgage rates. I mean, that's really probably you know, what they need to do. Otherwise, you got to figure out some kind of subsidies or something to get that to buy that rate down.
buy the rate down and then pass it along to the consumer. And the other issue that I have here, we have no problem with construction here in Charleston and Mount Pleasant, but it's not housing starts. It's apartment starts. Can you believe the apartments that are going in? And you know what? I drove by the Boeing plant. They are building a hangar.
They got a new hangar.
You could put the whole city of downtown Charleston inside that hangar.
I saw the steel that they were putting up there the last time, and I'm like, what are we building here? And it looks like they're building a skyscraper, but it's just a hangar.
It's a hangar. Yeah, to hang your clothes. No, it's going to be a hangar for the 10-year backlog to get a $450 million Boeing jet. I've never seen anything like it in my life. Well, Boeing didn't have very good news yesterday. Boeing confirms 8 fatalities in an Edwards Air Force Base B-52 crash. How much does a B-52 cost there, Barry?
I don't know. I was trying to think back if we're making new B-52s. I mean, I was under the impression that a lot of those B-52s are, we've updated over the years and have refurbished. I was interested to see, when one of those things last kind of came off the assembly line, actually.
Yeah.
They're very stealthy ones, right?
That look like a triangle.
Well, when they were built, the B-52 is gonna be remember the original kind of carpet bomber?
Carpet bombing, yes.
You know, of course, nowadays, you've moved on to the stealth bomber, the B-1, B-2, obviously, different types of payloads as well. But if you want to bomb everything in a vicinity, the B-52 is the plane of choice. But it's a just sad situation. I saw where looks like the whole thing just almost disappeared. I mean,
I have not seen a video. I've been to Edwards Air Force Base. It was not too far. It was in the high desert, like Lancaster, high desert area, Baker maybe. There was a burger joint called the Space Burger out there because the space shuttle used to land at Edwards Air Force Base. And we also had March Air Force Base in Riverside, Paris area in California, which had a lot of bombers, huge, huge fleet of massive bombers ready to go at a moment's notice. But it killed 8 crew members, and 2 of them were 2 Boeing employees.
Oh, man.
Were among those on board. After reviewing footage of the crash, it was determined that no one could have survived. Colonel James Hayes, the deputy commander for the 412 test wing at Edwards, said at a news conference, he said, "We lost 8 great Americans. Officials were working to notify their families. It's not immediately clear what caused the crash. It could take up to 6 months to complete an investigation." The Boeing B-52 Stratofortress is a long-range bomber. Listen to this. That entered service in 1955.
Yeah.
That's older than me, for heaven's sake. I didn't think anything was older than me. Designed to carry both conventional and nuclear weapons. It's been used in conflicts involving the U.S. military from Vietnam to Iran. In 2025, Boeing sent a B-52 to Edwards with a new modernized radar system. And they think it was unclear whether that was involved because the old radar was antiquated.
Well, when it happened right off, I mean, I think it happened shortly after takeoff. So usually when you have some type of issue like that, it tends to be, some type of failure, right? When you have something so close from takeoff. So it'll be, it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. But, just terrible tragedy there.
Yep. Federal funds futures are still pricing in a Fed rate hike, which is exactly opposite of what I'm predicting for tomorrow. And we know last week that the ECB, the European Central Bank, that we usually remain in sync with, they raised rates 0.25%. And, if Jerome Powell was pretty much did what the rest of the world did. He had no independent mind whatsoever. And if he was still at the helm, he'd be hiking rates tomorrow for sure. I'm positive of that. Warsh will either leave rates alone, even though the Fed fund futures are pricing in a rate hike. I don't see that happen. Do you see a rate hike happening?
I mean, a lot of the inflation we've seen has been, has strictly been energy related. So, a lot of that stuff gets stripped out. You can make the committee can make a good argument of, hey, this, they probably won't use the transitory word, but in their arguments with each other, it's probably going to be that obviously this is potentially transitory. And the further that this, that this deal with, Iran, comes to fruition, then the more of an argument you can make for this being a transitory inflation.
And so, getting the Iran deal right before the Fed meeting and driving oil prices down to $76 per barrel, it's pretty hard to make the argument that inflation is a problem now.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so the timing could not have been better. I'm sure that had something to do with, getting the deal done before the Fed met, because the Fed is so powerful. I mean, even that will drive decisions concerning wars, etc. Oil hits a three-month low. Tanker CEOs are cautious on Hormuz. Yeah, I mean, oil prices could go right back up if they were to sink a tanker, if they were to put up a blockade. I don't think we're out of the woods yet. And of course, they're at the G7 meetings right now, and Trump is saying that the framework with Iran has been signed, and that the Strait of Hormuz will completely reopen on Friday. You know, when I was growing up, we used to go water skiing on Mission Bay. And we had a lady, she was a character. She had a little boat. And she would water ski behind the boat. And she would put the handles, like, between her knees. And so her hands were free. And she would wave to the beach and the people passing by. I could just see someone doing that in the Strait of Hormuz and getting blown out of the water by Pete Hegseth. You know, you don't want to do that. But she was a character. That was over by SeaWorld in San Diego, where we used to.
She's probably a SeaWorld performer. They used to do that. They used to, everybody at SeaWorld, where they would have, have those kind of
they had
water
little,
ski acrobats.
Don't you have that in Florida?
They used to in Florida. Yeah.
What was in the Busch Gardens, right?
Yeah, I think it was either at one of them, SeaWorld or Busch Gardens. I think you're right. I think it was at Busch Gardens, because I think they had a bigger spot to do it.
Then at that same Mission Bay, I remember we were on vacation. My dad had like a couple weeks off, so we were doing some water skiing in Mission Bay, and he's putting the boat back on the trailer launch, right? And he steps on a broken Pepsi bottle.
Oh.
Cuts his foot wide open. It looked like he'd been attacked by a shark as the blood billowed out of his foot. Ruined his whole vacation, obviously. He had to have like 40 stitches in his foot. And I remember another time, Barry, we were on vacation, and in the day, you didn't have fire pits at the beach. You could just build a little fire and cook your burgers and then cover it up with sand, okay? You can't do that anymore. I don't even think you can have a fire in a fire pit. But my dad steps on 900-degree charcoal. Somebody
underneath the sand? Oh, man.
Had buried in the sand, and all of a sudden I see him running down the beach, hopping up and down. I go, what is wrong with Dad? And he had a blister the whole bottom of his foot of stepping on those hot charcoals. He ruined another vacation. That was his luck. That's why I don't go water skiing. Or on family vacations, because of the history I had with my father. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit. We got to talk about SpaceX. How many people have asked me about SpaceX in the last 2 weeks?
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
So I would say that 99% of the questions I get from people these days via email or some kind of message, even my brother, What do you think of SpaceX, Bill? Well, obviously, it's the biggest IPO of all times. It's now in the books. Elon Musk is the world's first trillionaire. Many early investors in SpaceX have done just fine. All of the venture capital and the, you know, these big private equity firms in the Bay Area have made billions on this deal. The question is, how about investing in it today, Barry? Now, you know, the rubber hits the road, because if stocks follow earnings, which I believe they do, doesn't it just make sense to wait and see and let this concept of databases in space has not been proven yet. It's a concept, and it is the basic business model of SpaceX. And just taking a look, number one, what are the capital expenditure requirements to even get these data centers into space, Barry? How much money has got to be spent?
Well, you've got to, I mean, number one, you've got to have a rocket big enough to shoot 100, I think it's 150 tons or so.
Wow.
Up in the air. And they've got a very important test coming up soon for the engineering side of this equation, right? And the other key is you've got to bring down both rockets, you know, rocket pieces have to come back in one piece, which he's shown he can do.
Yeah, land them back on the launch pad.
There's other times where they haven't gone as planned.
No.
But it's possible. So we know it's possible, but the key is to make it worth the money, you have to continue to capture those and reuse the rockets. So there's execution risk there, and I talked about this a good bit on the show yesterday, but the, you know, to me the biggest issue is, number one, they raised $75 billion, $20 billion going to a bridge loan that they had to pay off.
Yep.
And then a good bit of it's going to computing power on Earth between XAI and, you know, in terms of Grok and Colossus, which is their data center business. The interesting thing is where their revenue is going to come from initially.
Starlink.
A significant amount of it. Yeah, Starlink for sure already. And then the next piece is actually hosting, you know, data centers, just like, you know, Amazon and Microsoft and, you know, some of these big hyperscalers, right, have. So there's a lot of execution risk. I mean, you know, there's a lot of chatbots out there, whether it's Grok or whether it's, you know, Claude or OpenAI, right? ChatGPT,
whatever. A lot of competition.
Take your pick,
AI.
Gemini,
yep.
Right? Take your pick. And so, I mean, there's, you know, bottom line is there's a tons of execution risk here, and you've got an oversubscribed, excited, you know, investor base. I think it generated, you know, a bunch of purchases from individual investors. Stock's going, what was it, over 200 today, I think, at the moment. But long term, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Well,
I can't wait for the first earnings call. It's going to be a one to get your popcorn,
yeah.
You know?
Well, he says they'll have $1 trillion in sales by 2030. That would be an incredible number, given that this is midway through 2026. And Elon Musk is saying that he'll have $1 trillion in sales.
And I think the street has more like, I want to say it was more like $300 billion at most by that time frame, right? I think he said by 2030. The analyst estimates are much lower than that. Of course, you know, he's like you said, he's P.T. Barnum. He can he's
talk the stock up for so long,
right.
But eventually there's got to be some sales. There's got to be some people sign up for these data centers. And now, okay, the second thing, stocks do follow sales to some extent. I mean, we've invested in some companies like Nebius and others that don't have earnings yet, but their sales growth is explosive. And Elon's sales growth is next to nothing right now because he has very little in the way of sales. And I don't see the sales growth coming for quite some time, even though he says it'll be $1 trillion. Well, that would make the stock trading at just 2x sales. If that's true, or maybe 3x sales, I don't think it's true. I think it's a wild Now we drop to the bottom line. How long will it be before they ever have earnings, profit?
Right. And here's the, I mean, here's how to put it in context. I mean, this stock's 3 days old, right? Its first full day of trading was yesterday. And it's already, I mean, I just saw a note that it's about to surpass Amazon as in terms of market cap.
Yeah, and it's already bigger than Amazon. With no sales, it's bigger than Amazon.
Which is wild.
Okay, so.
I mean, credit to Elon. I mean, if you want to give credit where credit's due, like, whatever, you know, he's pulled another rabbit out of the hat.
Yeah.
In this sense. I mean, just massively. The fact is, I mean, he's saw a stat where he's now the, you know, richer than the next four richest people on Earth, which one of those being Jeff Bezos, by the way. So you put all four of them together, and they're at his net worth.
He's got to be richer than a lot of countries around the world, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean,
so here's my thing. I do think that he will combine Tesla into it at some point in time. I think that he has to. I'm going to wait and see how sales and earnings grow over the next several months and years, because his concept has not been proven. I find no reason to invest in the company today. That's the decision that I've made. It's like a biotech that has an idea. Well, let's wait till they get to, what do they call it, phase one trial, phase two, phase three. And I look at it the same way as I do a quantum stock or a nuclear stock. Those are long, long-term companies that are very, very subject to interest rates and the whims of the news coming out of the company. So I don't see any hurry to get invested. You're speculating right now. There's a hole in the ground with a bunch of liars standing around it saying there's gold down there. I'm going to wait and invest until they strike gold, the first vein of gold, right? And I think that's my approach to SpaceX, and I think that's a prudent approach. I'm a guy who values companies on their earnings and their sales. And if there's no earnings or no sales, how do you value it? I mean, you have the same problem with Bitcoin. How do you value Bitcoin? Gold, at least, we know how much gold there is in the world. It has intrinsic value. It has it's so much per ounce for gold anywhere you go in the world. And Bitcoin doesn't have that luxury. It's a total intangible. And for me right now, SpaceX is a total intangible. Now, I think I'm in the minority with that opinion. I think the individual investor is just dying to buy some SpaceX to say they've invested in it, and I'm not going to put it. Why would I put it in a premier growth portfolio when it has no growth? It has prospects for enormous growth. So if you come to me and you say, Bill, I want to invest in your premier growth portfolio, which is having a pretty darn good year, an unbelievable year. Don't trust me. Get the newsletter and see what it's done so far this year. Why? It would be like pulling a guy up, drafting a guy out of high school for the Dodgers, right, and having him bat cleanup on day one when he's a totally unproven player in the major leagues. That's the way I look at it. And that's the way I'm going to play it. So you will not find SpaceX. You're not going to find it in the value portfolio. If it went into any portfolio, it would be in the emerging growth, the most aggressive portfolio of all.
But with this capital market capitalization being you know, bigger than probably all the emerging growth companies combined.
Yes, because
right?
most of my emerging growth are small cap.
Right.
And this is now one of the $10 trillion companies around the world. So it just doesn't fit in my way of valuing things. Applied Materials valuation tops the dot-com peak. Now, I've followed Applied Materials for years out of the Bay Area. They were around. Their CEO is Morgan. I can't think. Dan Morgan, Steve Morgan, something like that. And they were around minting the equipment to make chips in the late 90s. And they're still around building the equipment to make chips. Now, not like to the degree that ASM Lithography does, the Netherlands company, but Applied Materials is still a major player in building semiconductors. And we still own it in a couple of our portfolios. Let's not forget that SpaceX is not the end of this IPO wave that is going to hit us. It's already hit. The first wave is hit. But there's several waves behind it with Anthropic, with OpenAI. DeepSeek is going to go public. And let's not forget, I mean, China is a massive competitor. At the end of the day, how many AI stocks are going to dominate the marketplace? I think, you know, there's a couple. I think probably Google's Gemini is going to remain a dominant player. And I think that Microsoft's ChatGPT is going to remain a dominant player. And let's not forget that ChatGPT is really OpenAI. But when you get down into the Anthropics, what is that, Claude? Is Anthropic Claude? Or is that OpenAI?
Yeah, Anthropic's Claude, OpenAI being, I guess, ChatGPT, and then we've got Gemini at Google, and then Grok at XAI.
So, yes, and then you've got all the Chinese companies, and Alibaba, DeepSeek, the others out there, PDD, et cetera, that have their own versions of AI. OpenAI spending surges to $34 billion ahead of the public listing, and that's why I've said it's better to own the companies where the spending is being spent. Micron, SanDisk, Applied Materials, ANET, ASM Lithography, NVIDIA. They're on the receiving end of this massive spend that is taking place. That makes much more sense to invest in them than in the OpenAI companies themselves, even though there's a lot of glamour around the AI companies, Barry. You've got the guy from Silicon Valley that hates Musk, and you've got Musk involved, and you've got the ChatGPT, the Google people. It's quite a war taking place, and then you got Palantir out there on the outskirts of town. And at the end of the day, there's going to be a few dominant players left, right? And the other ones are going to get crushed.
Yeah, and the trick is, I mean, at least from what you hear so far, Claude and kind of Anthropic has been kind of in that lead at the moment.
And ChatGPT.
Yeah, and it's been
Gemini.
Kind of a race back and forth. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So now I'm seeing, when I go on to my where my website is hosted, they're offering a suite
to all three, right?
To all three for like $20 a month. So it's already becoming a commodity as to which AI you're going to use. $20 a month and you get access to all three. But there's different levels of access, right? There's a professional level of access. There's an amateur level of access, and you pay accordingly. I mean, there's a lot of people paying $1,000 or more for an Anthropic subscription. You know, businesses are paying a lot more than that. So I just think I would rather own Micron and these other companies than owning. Now we get down into non-AI stocks. Pizza Hut is being spun off from Yum Brands. Yum Brands, which had the four food groups of America, Taco Bell, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and A&W Root Beer, right? I mean, I grew up on that stuff.
That's why I had
to watch it as I got older.
Remember they were called Tricon at one point when it was just
they were
KFC,
Tricon.
Taco Bell, and Pizza Hut, right?
Yeah. Yes, and then they bought A&W Root Beer and maybe a few others, but they're spinning off Pizza Hut. And here's the thing. For most of our life, that was the only thing you could have delivered to your door was a pizza.
That's right.
There was no Uber Eats. I see in New York City, I see five 4-star restaurants packing up bags for Uber Eats. Can you imagine somebody having a 4-star restaurant delivery? the caviar is going to be a little off by the time it gets to your house. Yeah, but that's plating. New York City.
I mean, is that what? All it takes is one little tilt of that bike that it's getting delivered on to, you know, to mess up the nice plating at the Michelin restaurant.
Yes, right. You're eating pate out of a styrofoam cup. But so that's hurt the pizza business big time. Because now, you know, I can get a Jersey Mike's sandwich delivered. I can get, you know, an Italian lasagna dinner with all the fixings and trimmings delivered. So pizza's in trouble, and they're spinning off Pizza Hut. I wouldn't buy Pizza Hut myself, but that's what they're spinning off. And, of course, Yum! Brands has been a horrible stock over the years. Pepsi acquired Pizza Hut in 1977. Held it for 20 years before spinning it off along with Taco Bell and KFC into a new company called Tricon Global, which later named itself Yum Brands. And, you know, some people, they like Pizza Hut best. Some people like Domino's best. I don't know. I think it's a very low margin business. And now you've got, you're competing with five-star restaurants on Park Avenue in New York City. Former Fed Governor Stephen Moran rejoins hedge fund Hudson Bay Capital Management. Well, you know, the hedge fund industry is not what it was. And Moran, this company he's going to work for in Greenwich, Connecticut, which is where most of the hedge funds are right now, they're no longer headquartered in New York City. Greenwich is a much friendlier, you know, environment for hedge funds. You know who works at, you remember Nouriel Roubini?
Yeah, right.
Mr. Wrong? He's been wrong about the markets for 25 years.
He's an economist.
He's an economist.
Yeah, so they're always a little pessimistic if you just.
He wakes up and says it's going to rain today and goes outside with an umbrella, even though there's middle of summer in August. He's probably the worst commentator on the market and market predictor that I've ever seen, Nouriel Roubini. He served in the administration of former President Bill Clinton, and this guy's going to work at Hudson Bay with Nouriel Roubini. Would I invest money with that? I'd invest in SpaceX before I invested in that firm, but that's just me. NVIDIA. Now, you need to look into this, Barry. A bond offering, okay?
Yeah, I saw that.
You're not going to get a very good yield on NVIDIA bonds. We're out of time. If you want a four-week trial to my newsletter, the live alerts, access to my app for 4 weeks, that's worth $90. Go to GundersonCapital.com. And if you'd like to talk to us about money management, take a look at how we've done so far this year, since the beginning of the year. Call us, 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.